Morning, everybody. My name's Dot Talley, and I'm an alcoholic. It's wonderful to be here. I can remember the first time I came to Founders Day. It was in 1976. My sponsor had mentioned, I came into program in 75, and there was a world convention in Denver, and then Founders Day in April, and she asked me about attending both, and I wasn't impressed, because I could go around the corner to a meeting, see? And I didn't come to Founders Day in 75, and I didn't go to the World Convention. But I did come in 76, and I remember that well, because I was walking down the street with a friend, Anna Mae, and a feeling came over me, and I didn't know what it was, and it was so strong, I just stopped in the middle of the sidewalk. Start thinking about what I was feeling, because I always knew stuff like I was fearful, I was angry, I was jealous, I was resentful. I knew those kind of, I could readily identify those kind of feelings. But this was kind of different. And I discovered that it was happiness that I was feeling just to be mingling with about 5,000 sober alcoholics. And I was happy for no other reason than just to be alive. And so I remember Founders Day for that, because it's the first time I identified happiness. I met a lot of people from coming to Founders Day, and I was just sitting here looking out over the crowd. And the thing that came in my mind was, I am loved. And it's kind of mind-blowing, like, just to know that. For whatever reason, I'm loved. You know, when you see a funeral and you see a hearse and a family car, and that's all you see, you know that the person that's dead is a person that went through his or her life and never gave nothing. And you see, I'm sitting here thinking, I ain't got to worry about death whenever I go. I ain't got to worry about it, you see, because I know a whole lot of folks that they gonna miss me, you know. And the line is going to be long for blocks and blocks, you know what I mean? And I'm going to just be smiling, you know? And I like that feeling, because all my life I have been a very lonely individual. Even in a crowd, I was lonely, you know? And I guess in many, many ways I was new as a partier. And I guess on the outside I was. And I would start drinking and have a good time up to a point. I always drank, and I drank for a glow, and I never got disappointed. I always got that glow. But I would drink past that glow into something I didn't want to be in, you know, which was drunk. And I ain't never liked being drunk. For the first time I ever got drunk to the last time, I just didn't like it, because it was out of control. And I didn't like being out of control. I like being cool. We called it, where I grew up, learning your ABCs, always be cool. I learned that real good. I knew how to be cool. I was raised in a red light district, and I liked it. Very fascinating. I didn't know it was the wrong side of the tracks until I grew up and other people started talking bad about my neighborhood. And it was always very important for me to please them. So what I would do is I would pass my street, because the girls in school, when I went to high school, would talk bad about it. And I didn't want them to know I lived on that street. Then I'd go around the corner and cut through the alley, you know. But it was important for me always to be what somebody else wanted me to be. But I really liked my neighborhood, because they had a lot of cat houses, after-hour joints, gambling joints, and it was fascinating to me. The people that was doing wrong seemed to have a great pull on me. I did not admire people like my mother, the hard workers, the parents, and the folks that, you know, had them babies and had them jobs and all that kind of stuff. I wasn't too impressed with that, because it just looked like all they had was tired to me. And life was a little bit of a drudgery. I met a guy, Tom, in Florida last year, and he said on his 11th birthday, he said, well, after his parents gave him the gifts, well, is this all there is? You know, I'm 11, and pretty soon I'll be 16, and then I'll have to get a driver's license, and then I'll have to go to war, and then I'll come back, and I'll get a job. Life was over, and I know that feeling, because it just seemed like whatever it was, if this is all you did, I didn't know that expression, a veil of tears, but honey, it was a veil of tears for me from Jump Street. It just wasn't, I wasn't turned on or excited about life and nothing in it that I had been exposed to date. It just was a process of getting up and laying down, going to school and do what other folks told you to do, and I didn't like that, especially since they was always telling you to be a good girl. And I knew what they meant by that, and I wasn't impressed with that either. And I found that I felt guilty because I didn't feel guilty, and I thought I should have felt guilty by doing all the stuff that good girls wasn't supposed to do. Thank God I never got good, even till I got here, and I don't want nobody telling me about being good today. That's trouble. But it was almost like a book, you know, like folks being born, and when you get born, you get a book of rules, and this is what you're supposed to do. Well, I got the book, like everybody else. But wouldn't nobody else tell me what page they was on? So, it was just, you know what I mean? I never knew what to do. So I would watch somebody else and sort of take my cues from them, you know. And right away, I felt like I was owed something. I remember when I was about 14 or 15, this older guy liked me, you know, and he had a job. And so he said, now, when I get paid, I'm going to give you, and I don't know what amount of money he said. And so in my mind, I was spending that money. And in my mind, I was tricking him. I said, I know what he want me to do, but I ain't going to do it, but I'm going to get the money anyway. So he didn't show on payday, so I tracked him down for my money. He was in this gambling joint, and I went in, and I kept punching him, don't spend all, don't gamble up all the money. So he did, you know, when you're gambling, you don't want to get up off them bucks. And I don't remember ever seeing this in the movie or hearing nobody say it, but it come in my mind. Now, when he get ready to put the card down, his body goes this way, and then he leans back that way. Now, if I catch him someplace in the middle, I can get in that pocket, you know, and that's what I did and got my money. And do you know, I really felt justified. I felt like it was my money. I went up to my mother's house and I went to bed. The guy called the police, brought the police to my mother's house, and my sister was about 11, and I stuffed the money in her mouth because I thought, I was determined right then, no matter what happened, I ain't giving it up. See, I ain't giving it up. So the police took me outside, and they patted me on the shoulder like a father, and they said, now look, we understand, and just give the money back, and you know, nothing will happen. And by the way, my mother practiced Al-Anon before there was Al-Anon, because when they brought me down her stairs to take me to jail, she said, I hear they got bed bugs up there. You better take this coat. And she didn't ask me, did you do it? Didn't you do it? She didn't ask me nothing. She just gave me a coat. But the point I'm making is that I was determined, no matter what happened, not to give that money back, because it was my money. And I talked to the police, and I told them, look, like, if I had it, I'd give it back. I just don't have it. I convinced him that I didn't have it, and he sent me back to my mother's house. And that was to be the course of my life. You know, you can think and do stuff so long till you really believe it's reality. And somehow or other, like, I quit speaking to him. How dare he do that to me? My mother, from that day to this day, never asked me, Dot, did you take the money? She just didn't. Somehow or other, she knew. And, you know, today, I listen to people when they talk about me and how I was. The longer I'm sober, the more I realize I don't really know that much about how I was. Because people tell me stuff, and I get ready to open my mouth to say it didn't happen, or I wasn't there or something, and I close my mouth. Because, see, I don't know what happened, and I don't know if I was there. a guy I used to go with, a friend of his asked him about me and one day, and he said, oh, man, you ought to see her. She's in AA, and she ain't crazy no more. And the guy said, but she didn't just say, you just met her, you know, like in 72, said, I knew her when she was 16. She always was crazy. And, you know, I don't really know where he's coming from, but I believe him. I really believe I always was crazy because I think I became an alcoholic the first time I drank. Now, I didn't always think that. I drank some whiskey, and it was hot, and it tastes terrible, and I took another drink. Now, if that had been a tomato and it broke me out and tasted terrible, I wouldn't have ate no more tomatoes. But I continued to drink till I got drunk that time. And yet I drank again. And I spent days in my young life involved with alcohol. I would get drunk on Saturday, recuperate on Sunday and Monday, be able to sit on the side of the bed on Tuesday, be totally well Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and be drunk again on Saturday. My one drunk entailed 4 days of recuperate. And this is what I would do every week. So there was something wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. I got into marijuana when I was about, oh, I guess about the same age, about 13. I didn't like that either. Then I got into pills. I definitely didn't like no pills. I remember one time somebody gave me something called Benzedrine, and you put it in some Coca-Cola or coffee, and you break open the nose inhaler, and they said it made your heart beat fast. And I lived on the third floor. I took that stuff and run up and down the steps about 6 or 7 times. And I wanted to just live dangerously and have my heart beat fast. You know, just anything to get me out of me is what I wanted. You know. And so I can't say, then I got into cocaine, heroin, the whole thing. And I cannot say that any chemical that I took initially did it for me. I didn't find a panacea right away. I had to practice a little bit. But you know, when you practice, you learn to get good. And hey, I learned to drink. I learned how to drink. I learned to hang and hang all night and all day and all night. And I got good at all of it. And so I can use that today, see. How am I going to get good at this program? Practice. How am I going to get good at anything in my life that I know is good, positive, and uplifting for me? Practice. Because, see, I ain't got sense enough to want to do the right thing. Just automatically. Why would I want to do the right thing? I always want to do the wrong thing. I'll be sober 8 years the 27th of next month, and if there's two ways to go, the positive or the negative, the first inclination is the negative. Because I'm closer to that. See, I'm still closer to the old way. But that's why I keep coming, I keep listening, I keep learning, so that little by little by little, I don't make the same mistakes. And when I do, I don't make them as often as I used to make them. Don't mean I don't make mistakes, I still do. But the difference is, I guess I got freedom to make them today. I don't necessarily believe folks when they say they don't care what nobody thinks. I care what people think. The difference is I don't care to a degree that it will make me change my way of thinking to please them. That's the difference today. I'm free to be me. This is the most fantastic thing that's ever happened to me being in this program. My sister Carol is here today from Atlantic City, and I remember her telling me that her first sponsor told her that AA would be the greatest adventure of her life. It is for me. And she passed that information on to me. And when she told me, I wasn't too impressed, really. I was impressed by her because I had never seen anybody like her. But I wasn't impressed about it being the greatest adventure of my life because I'm wondering how. You know, sitting in a room full of folks, you know, in the smoke and drinking all that coffee and everything. What kind of turn on is that? But it really is. I had felt some stuff in this fellowship that I did not know what it was so many times. You know, and here's old Cool Dot. When I am feeling a lot of the stuff that I feel today, all I know is that I like that feeling and I want to feel it some more. I don't even necessarily know how to identify what it is, you know, because I got a big mouth even sober, and I think I probably talked a lot when I was drinking too, you know. But you ought to see me when I meet a dude. You remember being in the first grade and you want to impress the teacher? And so you go in, especially the ones that acted like I acted when I was a kid. And what you do, you go in and you fold your hands on the desk like this. See, sit right in the front row. So the teacher will think you're a good little girl, you know. And I used to try that when I was a kid, and by the time I was 10 years old, they didn't send me to the psychiatrist twice. And I had never had a drink. But, see, and I don't know why. Stuff would come over me to do stuff, you know what I mean? And I could not, I couldn't help it, you know. And my mother was trying to impress on me, look, we're poor, number one. And then you've got you black, number two, and black folks don't go to no psychiatrist. You know? But they had me as a psychiatrist. I still don't know why. You know? But that's the way. And the thing is, I think it's so refreshing to be sober and to be able to feel stuff, to be afraid. Let me tell you something. I've been all over this country, and there's a whole lot of stuff I've done. To be able to have something. When I walk into a room full of people that a dude would look at me and to know that I ain't even drank it all up, all I can say is praise the Lord. You know, the women get bent out of shape because the dudes look at them. I don't. I don't get bent out of shape. I like it. You know, it's just like I don't want to get married, but I sure as hell want to get asked. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm living today, you know. By the time I was 21, I went to the penitentiary for the first time. And I returned to the penitentiary a total of 5 more times over the next 20 years because I didn't learn nothing the first time I went or the last time. They told me they could wear me out. I didn't believe them, but they did. But when I look back on that experience, I think my life was saved because of that. I really do. I needed to be removed from me and locked up from me. I really did. I think my life was saved because of that. I ain't mad at the police today. I got stopped a couple of months ago for a ticket for $70. And I didn't argue. And I didn't say what I always said. Why don't you stop them? Why don't you stop them? I didn't say none of that. Just to give me the ticket and let me get going. See, because I didn't have to clean out the glove compartment. I didn't have nothing to throw away. When the police stopped me to give me a speeding ticket, I said thank you and took the ticket and kept going. When somebody knocks on my door today, I don't have to keep wondering who it is. Is the door going to get kicked in? And that's the way I lived all my life, wondering when it was going to happen. And no matter how good it ever was, it wasn't good enough. Because in the back of my mind all the time was, but tomorrow's going to be different. This ain't going to last. And I was right. It was going to be different. It never lasted. And however bad I remember it was, multiply that 10,000, because I know I don't know how bad it really was. And see, when my mind starts telling me when I'm on my way to work in the morning, because I don't like to work, and my mind will start telling me, not you don't want to go to work, why don't you ride through the street? You know, I mean, it wasn't so bad out there. I know that's the devil. See, I know the enemy today, and I just roll the window down and kick his butt right out my car. Because however bad I thought it was worse than that. Here, ain't no way that nobody would come to Alcoholics Anonymous if you think you, and we tell you that, and we're pretty nice. We say, if we think you got a problem, why don't you come to a few meetings? Honey, if you think you got a problem, you got a problem. You know? Because my mama got drunk when she was 17, and she found out she didn't like it, and she ain't been drunk no more. She ain't got no problem. But if you think you got a problem, you probably got a problem. I'm so glad to know what I am today. I have never known what I was. I'd be in them nut houses, and I'd be trying to start riots, you know, because I thought I wasn't a nut. I thought they had locked me up just to put me someplace, you know. And the nuts would obey. They would follow directions. They'd say, put your soap here, put your towels here, let me light your cigarette. And see, I rebelled against all that. I didn't like nobody telling me nothing. And I remember this particular time I woke up, I'd been there 12 days and didn't even know it. And I come out, And of course, I wanted a cigarette. And the lady say, I can give you a cigarette, but I can't give you no match. I said, how come you can't give me no match? She said, well, they don't give us matches. I said, how come they don't give you no matches? Well, they just don't give us matches. I said, well, come on, I want a match. And I went to the front desk. See, I was ready to start a ride right then. Always, because it was easier for me to deal with the folks out here than it was for me to concentrate or look up to me for anything in here. I was never able to do that. I was a loser all my life. I had to stand up here and say that today, see, because I ain't no loser no more. I'm a winner. I'm a winner because I say it, you know. I have always had a fear of failure and a fear of people. And I was thinking about it one day, and I was thinking, but you know, Dot, all success is built on failure. I became aware of that. I tried to drink just on Saturday, and it didn't work. I tried drinking mixed drinks. I tried drinking drinks with water. I tried just drinking beer. I failed at everything I did in that area of how to drink. I would change the days I drank. I would change the hours I drank. I'd eat that butter. I'd drink that, that other icky stuff, to swallow that mineral oil, whatever it is, to put a lining on my stomach. See, and I failed at drinking alcohol. But I ain't failing today. I don't drink today. And I realized that all success is built on failure. Nobody starts out doing anything in life and instantly get it right. And so it's okay with me today. I can live with that. I am so grateful to be in this fellowship. You know, I went to the South a couple years ago, and I would hear people talk about, by the grace of God, the principles of the program, I have been sober, and they'd say how long they've been sober, you know. And I start thinking about that word, grace, and what it really meant. And I looked it up in the dictionary, and it means unmerited favor. It means that I can't earn it, that God just laid it on me. See, the grace of God. And that's why I'm sober. So when I hear people say, oh, I ain't no good, God ain't going to do this, I'm trying to make this up to God, I'm unworthy, especially that unworthiness. I said, you're right. You're unworthy, but he loves us anyway. If I try to wait to get good enough for God to love me, he never would love me. See, he loved me when I didn't pray. How much better is he going to love me now that I attempt to? See, and I put down some prayers. I tell you, when I got 50 and went to work, I have been praying for a man, and not only a man, I get very explicit. I want a man with money. See, because I got broke, and I didn't want to steal no more, you know, and I kept telling God, now you see I ain't stealing. You see, I'm in this program. You see, I'm trying to do it right. Now, you got to do your part. Well, I didn't know that much about praying. So I thought, well, you're supposed to pray, then you get up and play the lottery. Because I felt like that's the only way I knew that he would bless me. I didn't know nothing that much about no praying. And anyway, I prayed for a man, and he got me a job. And I got a little friend in Pittsburgh, Ace. Ace says that God always answers prayer. He says, yeah, no, wait, and you got to be kidding. And you know what? A whole lot of times I put down some of them, you got to be kidding prayers, the way he answers me, you know. But I do have a lot of gratitude for my sobriety. I really do. And it causes me not to murmur. I gave myself a chore of reading the Bible from cover to cover the first part of the year. And honey, that is a slick book. Really. And I learned so much from reading it. And I'm going to tell you a little story about that murmuring. You know, God picks a whole lot of folks to do his work. And he don't choose them. He really got a sense of humor. And them people are just like us, the ones he picked. None of them he picked wanted to do what he wanted them to do. When he picked Moses, Moses told him, I'd stutter, I don't talk good, I don't want to do it. And Moses was also on the lam. You know, he done killed somebody in Egypt. He was out there in the desert, tending the sheep. Here come God. Want him to go save the Israelites. Moses said, I can't go, I don't talk good. He said, okay, I'm going to send Aaron with you. And he did. And anyway, they come on out of Egypt, and he had promised them Jericho, which he called the Promised Land. And they made it across the desert, and God blessed them. And then they got there, and they sent out 12 spies to go check out Jericho. 10 come back and said, man, the people over there is like giants and we like grasshoppers. We just cannot take Jericho. We can't take the Promised Land. 2 of them, Joshua and Caleb, said, man, it's already ours. God done gave it to us. Let's go get it. We can win. Now, he done blessed them all across the desert, made their shoes where they wouldn't wear out, fed them manna from heaven, done did everything. But then, you see, if you got a negative committee, the report is always going to be negative. Now, he done blessed them. They, you know? Yeah. So God got mad, and I don't blame him. You know? And he told him, he said, look here, as you have murmured in my ear, so it will be unto you. He said, I told you I was going to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. You didn't believe me. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to make you wander around these rocks here in the desert for 40 years until everybody die, except Joshua, Caleb, and these young kids and stuff when they grow up. And they are the ones that inherited the Promised Land. Now, see, I can learn from that. What that tells me is quit murmuring. See, quit that murmuring in his ear. Don't mean I don't want to. I do a lot of times, but I don't do it. I just refuse to do that anymore. There's a lot of stuff I refuse to do anymore. I refuse to be depressed now that I found out I love being depressed. I have always loved being depressed. Now, I don't think it just started when I started drinking. I think, because, you know, I remember my mother in 1954 coming to California. I was living in California, and she really liked this guy I was born with. And she pulled that guy aside, because she was trying to make it work between us, and she wanted me to marry him. And I remember her telling him, now look, don't get upset and don't get excited if she goes off for 2 or 3 days by herself. You know, that's just the way, say, she's always done like that. She's trying to set it up so the dude don't think I'm too much of a nut. And, but I don't know why. I have always gone off and been depressed. See, and I did that in the program. And I don't do it no more because I found out evidently I love doing that, have always loved doing that. And so the way for me not to be depressed today is admit that I love it so I can get on with the business of living. And don't waste my time being depressed, you know. One time I got depressed impromptu. I hadn't planned that. I used to plan most of them. You know, we do. We plan them, you know, just from boredom and not having nothing else to do. And I had cigarettes to last me maybe a day and a half, and a little bit of food, oatmeal or something. And I stayed in there 8 days, and the longer I stayed, the better it got, and I didn't have no cigarettes, and I didn't have no food. But, you know, you can't stop being depressed to go shopping. So I just stayed on in there, you know, until my brother-in-law crawled across the roof and just beat on the door and wouldn't go away. I'm not depressed today. And when I find myself working into that, I got something to fight it with. See, I start counting up all the blessings in my life. See, and I don't have to look far. I really don't have to look far. Sometimes I wake up in the morning, and let me tell you, my knees hurt me so bad. When I get down to say my morning prayers, I forget what I'm doing. I say, well, God, how are you doing today? I don't know what to say. I just, you know what I mean? I guess I must be telling them I ain't too good today. But I just say, well, dang, how are you doing? You know, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Here I am praying, getting ready to go to work, you know. But he uses us, all of us, you know. He really, really does. And I think that's what blows my mind. I don't say no a lot today to things in the program or to things in just everyday living. I really don't, because it is not a big chore. And, you know, my thing was, oh, everybody's trying to pull me over here and pull me over here and want me to do this. This is all my life. You know what I mean? I wanted everybody to think I was such a good guy. That's why I collected all them sick people, see, You know, some of them that didn't have no place to live, and I'd say, oh, my God, if I ever get that bad, and I'd help her out by giving her a few clothes or give her a place to stay or some man, you know, give him this or give him that. You understand what I mean? To help me look good like everybody's trying to feed off of me. The truth was I was sicker than those people. I don't want to never get it wrong. See, a lot of times we come here and we get screwed up. It is not about on the Richter scale from 1 to 10, how much did you suffer or I suffer. If you're in this room, you need to be in here. See what I mean? My thing, there's a whole bunch of young folks sitting down here. Let me tell you something. Don't you let nobody kid you about that you don't belong here. Let me tell you something. One thing different about me and you, I suffered longer. I didn't suffer no more than you, than nobody in here. See? And we get all these old stories, especially when I get up, if I get into stuff about being in the penitentiary and stuff, and then somebody comes to me and try to tell me I ought to write a book. I ain't impressed with that because I think they ought to write a book. Anybody can write a book. You know, being an alcoholic or going to the penitentiary is not my claim to fame. Being sober is. See? We need to understand that whether you did it on Park Avenue or a park bench if you got sick, or that whether you're an aristocrat or an alley rat, if you're in this room, it don't make no difference. What route we took to get here, we all here. See, I'm looking for the humanity in you. This guy Jimmy Hart just talks about finding me in the we. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for me in the we. I don't never want to be self-sufficient no more. See? I have been self-sufficient. I have been alone. I have been doing it on my own. My way don't work. I need people, and I am so very grateful that I do. One of the worst things that could ever happen to me is for me to wake up one morning and not need you. I want to need you. See, I done had that separation all my life. You know what I mean? People talk about what they like, what they didn't like. You know, well, I didn't like men. I didn't like women. I didn't like black folks, white folks, tall folks, short folks, dogs, cats, skinny folks. I didn't like nobody. I really did not. All my life I have heard that you cannot love anybody until you love yourself. And we repeat a lot of stuff that, I don't know, maybe in some abstract way we know it's true. But I know in here today that that's true. If I don't look at and deal with me, I could care less about what goes on with you. I got to put God first and me next. See, that's the way it goes. I don't put nothing and nobody before God and die. I don't. And I got 4 grandchildren. I had to learn to pray because I was living in a house with my mama, me, my daughter, and 4 grandchildren and a sometime live-in dude. And baby, let me tell you something. You need a God, you got to pray. People talk about formulating words. I don't ask no new people, do they believe in God? I could care less. If they talk to me at a meeting, I tell them to pray. I ain't ready to go on no intellectual trip about God. You want to get better? Pray. That's what I do. There ain't no shortcut. You know, we want it yesterday. And I don't know why folks think, you know, they ain't supposed to be broke. They ain't supposed to be hurting. They ain't supposed to be sick. They ain't supposed to be... I'd be mad at God. If everybody got here and just breezed on through 20 years. You know, I'd be mad because I ain't doing it. I'm getting up and falling down and getting up and falling down and making mistakes and going over here and making a fool out of myself, looking good, looking bad. You know, that's living. That's living. You know, and I give myself strokes today. That's how you get better. God did not promise. The thing said the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. It don't say stop hurting, be comfortable. It don't say none of that stuff. You know? But if we hang in here, we can get better. Let me tell you a story about Gideon and about change. If you want to get better, you got to change. Period. There's a dude named Gideon in the book of Judges. And... It was a horde of people called the Midianites. They were some bad dudes. They was nomadic, you know. They didn't plant corn. They didn't do nothing. Just roam around the desert, you know, stealing. And the Israelis, you know, very civilized folks, and they'd plant and do this and do that. And every year the Midianites would come and raid their camp. you know, rape and steal their kids and take them off, sell them into slavery, rob them, loot them, and everything. So I don't know, Gideon might have been an alcoholic. This particular day, he was coming out of a wine press. And so here was the angel of the Lord. Hail, Gideon, mighty man of valor, the Lord is with you. Gideon looked over his shoulder. He said, who, me? He said, well, man, let me ask you something. If God is with me, what would it be like if he wasn't with me? He said, every year, the Midianites come and get us, raid our land, steal our children, you know. And the angel of the Lord told him, go in your power and save your country. Because Gideon was complaining about what was happening to his countrymen, you know. And what the angel of the Lord was telling him, look, man, you complaining about what you don't like, about what these Midianites is doing, how much don't you like it? God done gave you the power, go change it. See? Gideon told him, said, look, in all Israel, my village is the least. And in all my village, my house is the least. And in all my house, I am the least. I identify with that because I have felt that all my life. I was the least. I didn't act like it, but I felt like I was the least all my life. And you know why I interpret that to mean that if it's a relationship or something going on in my life today that I don't like, that God intends for me to go in my power, the power that he gave me, and make it different, change it. What is going on with me? I say, I ain't going to complain about a job for so long. I ain't going to complain. See, because he didn't give me the power to change it. I ain't got to work. I can make that choice. I don't have to be in no relationship. I have to change because I got grandchildren that may or may not be becoming addicted. I don't know if they are or not. I used to smoke them funny cigarettes when I was their age, you know, and it happened to me. I don't know whether it's going to happen to them or not, okay? But here's the program for them. Now, can I change them? I can't change them. So what should I do? I believe God gave me them kids to change me. Be tolerant. Love them. Let them know I'm supportive of them and I'm on their side. See, no matter what they do, I'm on their side. I ain't going to approve of what they do and they can't do it where I'm at. But I cannot change them and I ain't going to be beating them up and putting them out and doing all that kind of stuff to my grandkids. See, I have changed on the inside. I owe them kids what my mama owed me and gave me, and she prayed me into this program. Whole lot of folks been praying. You know, there's a place in the Middle West where people have been praying in some kind of Catholic church ongoing since the 1800s. See what I mean? I ain't got no right to stand here and talk about what I don't like about earth people and civilians, which I hate them words anyhow. There was folks praying. I took 34 years time out, baby. I didn't contribute nothing to the world. And folks was praying. See? They prayed for all of us, and then we get here and try to be better than this group and try to be better than that group, you know, and some of us is better than them Al-Anons, you know. You know, some of us AAs, we get real, you know, we get nuts. And let me tell you something. I have seen Lois, I don't know if she's here this year, but I've seen her every year since I've been coming, you know. And I like money, and I reduce everything to money. And Bill Wilson didn't have no job, and Lois did. And she bought that coffee and paid that rent. And if it wasn't for Al-Anon, it might not be no AA. See? Might not. And we need to stop it. We need to quit that. See, my thing, the question I ask myself every day, Dot, what are you going to do? Not him, not her. Sometimes the truth is so hard to face, and it's hard to know. See, they told me when I left rehab, the guy told me, Dot, you may die, but I'm going to see to it that you don't die ignorant. I ain't ignorant no more. See, man, I'm not ignorant. And if it's something going on in my life that I don't like, it's up to me to change it. I am happy every day of my life because I make a conscious decision to be happy. Period. Because I could run down a whole bunch of problems if I wanted to. But I'm happy for one reason. I decided to be happy. It's time, baby. It's time for me to be happy. See, I didn't have that other stuff. And I do it every day. You know, a lot of people, let me tell you something, a lot of folks don't believe in the devil, especially intellectuals, so I'll change it around. I'm going to call it positive versus negative, good versus evil, the light versus the darkness, and God versus the devil. I'm very graphic. I like God versus the devil myself. See what I mean? And I know I was his best disciple, and he's out to get me. He missed me. He want me back, but he ain't going to get me. He ain't going to get me. See, I know that you can waste a lot of time. When I go in a meeting and I'm bored and the folks ain't looking right and it's too hot and the coffee ain't right, there is something wrong with me. That's why I don't like being good. Let me tell you what good people do. Good people set themselves up to fail. They put all this criteria up here and they can't live up to it. Whatever is in your mind that you think is good, forget it. It ain't. See, and just say that crazy lady said, it ain't. Because we got a lot of crap in there. Especially since we felt so low down and raunchy all our lives. And we wanted to be good, and we said, well, if I could just start feeling like this or start acting like that or what. And then we get in here and we clean up our act. It ain't real. See, but we start acting like that. And it don't mean nothing. God is not impressed. He ain't. He ain't impressed. You know, see, you, all this here stuff about, well, I go to meetings. Well, I pick people up to go to me. Well, I do this here. And then we start pointing up all this good stuff. Guess what? He ain't impressed. Keep telling you can't earn it. He lays it on you. Let me tell you something. What impresses him is how you treat your fellow man. Not just AAs, but your fellow man. That impresses him. If you love him, act like it. How you going to act like it? Through service. That's how you act like it. At the bus stop, ask somebody, tell somebody to have a good day. See, we ain't got to wait to do good. We can do good as soon as we get up. When I come in my house, I am so tired from working and going here and going there, and then here's my grandkids. I said, Lord, if I can just get up the steps and get out these clothes. But see, I owe them too. It ain't about, see, I talk a good game and I come to these meetings and stuff and shake hands and hug kiss these people here. But how do I live in my own home? What do I do there? Charity begins at home. And if I'm messing over them people in my house, then it don't mean nothing no way. All this stuff out here. See, I have had that acting out. Good stuff. Because when I was in the street, I didn't want nobody to, you know, I didn't mind doing nothing as long as you didn't know. It's about change today. It's about giving myself strokes today. And I stroke myself. If y'all don't give them to me, I give them to myself. Look in the mirror and say, thought you're doing a good job. And ain't it strange when I tell people, I work for a drug and alcohol program, and I tell people to get in the habit of looking in the mirror and calling themselves a winner. And they start to laugh, you know. It embarrasses them. You ever talk about sex? Sex embarrasses people. You know, it does. You know that little embarrassed grin they get. They get the same way when I tell them to tell themselves they're a winner. They don't want to do it. But ain't it strange? All the women in here that used to put that eye makeup on would look up here and look down here. Never looked themselves in the eye. They don't want to see it. See, the eyes are the windows of the soul. Eyeball to eyeball and brush my teeth and just be talking to myself, baby, you're a winner. You're a winner. I need it. I got sick. I don't intend to be sick like that no more. You know, I intend to enjoy life. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the people in the program. And some people, especially young folks, refuse to get happy. They just refuse to get happy. And it makes me mad. And I'm very intolerant with young folks that don't want to be happy. You know. Now, I am of the opinion that you get here when you're supposed to get here. I didn't get here till I was 47, and I ain't got time to wait. I got to be happy now. But if you're happy, like my sponsor says, if you're happy, let your face know it. You see what I mean? See, when we in the fellowship, what do that mean? It gets better and better and better. You see what I'm saying? It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous is a little bit like having sex. If you don't enjoy it, you ain't doing it right. You gotta start doing it right. See? Yeah. just know that we're children of God. We are all children of God. He just loves us. He does. He really loves us. And just start giving yourself some strokes. Understand that we all got sick. See, I'm going to stay here. I ain't going nowhere because I'm going to be here when that person comes. Like my sponsor was here for me, a whole lot of stuff got solved on that telephone. Not necessarily in the meetings. I was too crazy sitting in meetings. But that woman stroked me on the phone and stroked me on the phone because I wanted to bolt and run, but there wasn't no place to go. Just wasn't nowhere to go. I had done it all. I had been every place. Wasn't no place to go. I had failed at all of that. And just that talking and talking, and I hated that talking, but I'd be on the phone every day. I didn't understand it. It wasn't nothing for me to like. What was I going to like? I was living in reality. What kind of fun is that? You know what I mean? I don't want to be in reality. But I got to remember that. I got to remember how I felt when I got here. I got to remember the things that happened to me, the way that the people reached out to me. I want to always remember that so I can give it back. And in closing, I'd like to read a poem. It reminded me of the program and how I feel about the fellowship. An old man traveling a lone highway came in the evening, cold and gray, to a chasm deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim, for the sullen stream held no fear for him. But he turned when he reached the other side and builded a bridge to span the tide. Old man, cried a pilgrim near, you're wasting your time building here. Your journey will end at the end of the day. Why build you a bridge at the end of the day? The builder raised his old gray head. Good friend, on the path I've come, he said, there followeth after me today a youth whose feet must pass this way. And this stream which was is not to me. May for that fair-haired boy a pitfall be. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building this bridge for him. You see? My sponsor was here for me. She built the bridge for me. I met a man last night in Columbus, Ohio, with 34 years sobriety who knew her sponsor. He built the bridge for her. And the continuity and the continuity and on and on and on. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, and I want to be here for somebody else. Thank you.